All right, I want to begin here. I got a story here from Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a great storyteller. And he tells the story of a boy that desperately wanted $50. He prayed for it for a long, long time. And when nothing happened, he decided to write God a letter asking for $50. And when the post office received this letter addressed to God, they didn't know what to do with it. So they sent it to the president. Just doesn't make sense right there. But this is a Ronald Reagan story. That's how they go, you know. So he gets this letter, and he's thoroughly impressed and amused by it, and he tells his aides to send the little boy $5. And the boy writes back to God, a thank you note to God. Dear God, thank you very much for sending the money. However, I noticed for some reason you sent it through Washington, and as usual, they kept most of it. Which I think is a good segue for where we're going here. I'm going to be in Mark chapter 12. Let me read this, Mark chapter 12, verse 13. Later, they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus to catch him in his words. And they came to him and they said, Teacher, we know that you are a man of integrity, and you aren't swayed by men, because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we? But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me? He asked. Bring me the denarius and let me look at it. They brought the coin and he asked them, whose portrait is this? And whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then Jesus said to them, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And they were amazed at him. So the question is it right to pay Caesar or not? And for some of us, that's a $64,000 question, right? More like a $6,400 question. But wouldn't it be nice if Jesus had said, no, don't pay those taxes? And every April, I go back to this text and thinking, did I read it right? Is that what it says? So, now, to put this in context, this is the last week of Jesus' life, just a few days from being tried and crucified. And what we talked about last week, you know, as we get into Mark chapter 12, we've been going through the Gospel of Mark, and you get to Mark chapter 12, begins with Jesus cursing a fig tree because it wouldn't produce fruit, and then he walks in the temple, and he overthrows the tables in the temple, and he says, this is to be a house of prayer for all nations, but you've turned it into a den of thieves. And then last week we talked about the parable of the wicked servants, so the wicked tenants who rented the vineyard but didn't give the owner his due. That's what that was about. And that parable ended with Mark 12, verse 12. It says this here, and they were seeking, talking to, about the Pharisees here. They were seeking to arrest him, but they feared the people, for they perceived that he had told the parable against them. So they left him and went away. The Pharisees, they were upset. They were mad about this parable. They knew the parable was directed to them, and they want to arrest him. They want to destroy Jesus. But since they feared the crowd, they feared the people, they feared how the people would react, they didn't do anything at that time, but now they come back. They come back with this intent to trap him. This is verse 13. They sent to him some of the Pharisees and some of the Herodians to trap him or to catch him in his talk. They're out to trap him. They're setting the trap. They're setting the snare. And I want you to see the scheme. Here the scheme is, verse 13, the Pharisees and the Herodians. Later, they sent some of the Pharisees and the Herodians. Just think through this right here. Because I'm thinking, what? Pharisees and Herodians working together? Because they don't work together. They don't like each other. The Herodians are followers of Herod, King Herod, and they're loyal to Rome. I'm assuming they get a kickback from Rome. It's a secular group, and they are supportive of the Romans. That's the Herodians. But they're working with the Pharisees. The Pharisees are a religious group, the religious leaders, who hate Rome. I was trying to come up with a good, you know, what would this be like? This would be like the KKK and Black Lives Matter teaming up on something. like, when would the KKK and Black Lives Matter work together on something? And here the Pharisees and Herodians are working together because they hate Jesus so much. They hate Jesus so much. The only reason this would work is because of their hatred for Jesus is more than their hatred for one another. And their strength in numbers is a mob mentality. Wickedness breeds wickedness. Bad company corrupts good morals. It says in Psalm 2, the kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. And that's what's going on here. They're teaming up against the Lord, against his anointed. The Herodians and the Pharisees. It says in Psalm 140, verse 5, the arrogant have hidden a trap for me. That's prophecy talking about what's going on right now. So the Herodians and the Pharisees, they team up together. And here's the bait, verse 14. They came to him and they said, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. But you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth." This is the Herodians and the Pharisees saying all this, right? What is that? What is that? This is flattery, what they're doing. They're flattering Jesus here. And I read a couple things about flattery. Flattery is patting someone on the back to find the soft spot to where you can insert the dagger. That's what flattery is. Flattery is the opposite of gossip. Gossip is saying something bad behind somebody's back, something that you wouldn't say to their face. Flattery is saying something to their face that you would never say behind their back. And what are they doing? First of all, they appeal to his high position. Teacher. They call him teacher. Just a few verses before, they were questioning his authority. By what authority are you doing these things? You have no authority here. And here, teacher. And they comment on his theological perfection. They say, "We know you are a man of integrity. You teach the way of God in accordance with the truth." You know, they're saying, you know, we the scholars, the religious elite, you know, the educated ones here, we've done our homework, and we find that you say what you're saying is scripturally accurate. We approve of what you're saying. You teach the truth. And then they comment on his lack of partiality. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. They're saying, you won't compromise. You'll never compromise. You have tremendous conviction. That's a noble thing. That's a beautiful thing. And then they comment on his divine purpose. They recognize that he's teaching the way of God. We know you're on a divine mission from God. You're the ultimate teacher, always true, on a mission from God. And all these things that they're saying, they couldn't have been more accurate. I mean, this is the truth. This is who Jesus is. The problem is they didn't believe any of it. They didn't believe a word of it, what they're saying. And what they're doing by all this flattery, they're trying, what they're aiming at is the pride. Pride is, you know, pride goes before destruction. And surely Jesus has pride. All of us have pride. We struggle with pride. And maybe Jesus struggles with pride. That's the trap that Satan often uses to bring us down, is our pride. And we need to know this here. And what's the trap? Now they've set the trap. After they've connived together, after they've poured all this flattery onto Jesus, now they hit him with this controversial question: is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we pay? So the issue here is taxes. Nobody likes paying taxes. Do they? Anybody here like? No, nobody likes paying taxes. There's two classes of people in America who complain about taxes: men and women. Okay, so kind of covers it all, right? Dave Barry, he says, remember that even though income taxes can seem like a pain in the neck, the folks at the IRS are regular people just like you and I, except they can destroy your life. Okay, there's a difference. And the Jews absolutely hated paying their taxes because they knew that where their taxes are going to Rome, and Rome is corrupt. Rome is oppressing them. Rome is evil. They hate Rome. So to give them money to pay these taxes, that's morally not acceptable. It's wrong. John MacArthur, he states in his commentary that for them, as for most Jews, paying any tax to Rome was not considered a legitimate duty and was done only with the greatest of reluctance. And I read that and think, nothing's changed in 2,000 years, you know. That's how we are about paying our taxes. Like, is this right? Should we be doing this? Should we be paying these taxes? So here's the scene. Here's the scene. You have the Pharisees who are against it. They're against paying taxes to Caesar. And you got the Herodians who are for it. They're for paying taxes to Caesar, probably getting a kickback. So that means whatever Jesus says, he's going to be in trouble. I mean, I don't see how he's going to get out of this one. They got him now. They got him. He can't say, no, don't pay your taxes, because then he'd be guilty of treason against Caesar. But he can't say yes to pay your taxes, because then the people would turn on him and they would not follow him anymore. So this is a no-win situation. Lose-lose all the way around. He's not going to get out of this one, right? All right, so verse 15, Jesus knew their hypocrisy. He recognized it. He saw what was going on. It tells us in Matthew 22, Jesus perceived their malice. In the NIV says, Jesus, knowing their evil intent. The King James says, he perceived their wickedness. He knew exactly what was going on. Jesus saw right through the phoniness of the Pharisees and the hatred of the Herodians. He knew that Satan was out to trap him. He spotted the trap. Jesus knew their hypocrisy. Why are you trying to trap me, he says. He knows the hearts of all men, and he knew this was a trap. Because the Pharisees and Herodians, they don't ever do anything together. They don't work together. So that's fishy right there, okay? And the Pharisees and the Herodians never say anything good about Jesus. So that's fishy right there. And he knows that pride goes before the fall. And his guard was up. He knew that Satan was after him. And I said this already, I say it again. You and I need to know this, the same thing. Satan is going to, he's coming after you like he came after Jesus, and he's going to use your pride to do it. We must be humble before the Lord. And get this, it was in Galatians 5 verse 16, I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of your flesh. We need to be in step with the Holy Spirit, led by the Holy Spirit, sensitive to what the Holy Spirit is saying. Stop listening to our flesh, or it's going to take us down. Jesus was not interested in gratifying the flesh. That's why Jesus was able to see so clearly what was going on. And his response is, bring me a denarius and let me look at it. That's what he says in verse 15. Bring me a denarius and let me look at it. So verse 16, they brought the coin, and he asked them, whose portrait is this? And whose inscription? Just let me point out a couple things here. He says, a denarius. Bring me a denarius. What is a denarius? A denarius is is about a day's wage. So in today's term, would it be fair to say, it's like bring me a $100 bill. Would that be fair? Bring me a denarius. Bring me a $100 bill. And then he asks, whose portrait is on this? And what's on a $100 bill? Is that Ben Franklin? I don't know. In this case, who is this? It's the emperor of Rome, Caesar. And what is the inscription? What does it say? It says, Tiberius Caesar, August, son of the divine Augustus, high priest. That's what it says. And you look at that coin with that image of Caesar and this statement, August, son of the divine Augustus, high priest. And here's clearly two violations of the Ten Commandments. Do not have any other gods before me. Do not worship graven images. The very existence of this coin was offensive to the Jew. It was blasphemous to a God-fearing Jew. That coin was blasphemous to a God-fearing Jew. So when Jesus says, bring me a denarius, let me look at it. And then one of these Pharisees pulls one out of his pocket. Do you see that? A holy man of God standing in the most holy place in the Holy Land with this blasphemous coin in his pocket. They are hypocrites. That's what they are. Trying to trap Jesus, and Jesus right there, he trapped them. And he says, whose portrait is this? And they couldn't win. Caesar's. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do now? And then Jesus blows them away with his answer. I like Darrell Ferguson. He says, what Jesus says next is one of the most powerful, poignant, brilliant, trenchant, history-shaping statements ever uttered. And I want you to see this. I think we can gloss over this. We know this story. Okay, move on to the next story, right? No, what Jesus just said, this is powerful. This is important. Because in one sentence, he answers their question. He escapes their trap. He redirects attention to what's really important. He introduces a whole new way of thinking about human government. And most importantly, he teaches exactly how you and I are to be living in two kingdoms. You and I, we're aliens to this world. We are strangers to this world. When we are redeemed by Jesus Christ, we are made for another world. We are made for the kingdom of heaven. But while we're not there, we're still here. We've got work to do here. And his answer tells us how to do it. This is such an important thing. And what does he say? He says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and give to God the things that are God. The English Standard Version. Wait, NIV here says, give back to Caesar. My NIV says, give to Caesar. This one says, give back to Caesar. The English Standard Version says, render, therefore, to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. This is the perfect answer to this perfect trick question. Jesus is basically saying, like him or not, Caesar is in the position of authority. And as such, he demands your respect and your submission. And you see this in a couple places throughout the Bible. Romans 13 says, every person is to be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. The governing authority. And remember, this was written during Nero, when Nero was emperor. If you know anything about Nero, the worst emperor ever. And that's when Paul says, you got to submit. You got to submit. Oh, that's hard. That is really hard. And Peter writes this in 1 Peter chapter 2. Submit yourselves, therefore, for the Lord's sake, to every human institution, whether to a king as to one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God. That's what Peter writes. So when Jesus says, what Jesus says here, he's not quoting Paul or Peter. Paul and Peter are writing what Jesus taught. This is what Jesus taught. We are to give to Caesar's what is Caesar's. And I really want to focus on this word render. Render, therefore, to Caesar. The word give, that's what the NIV says, give to Caesar. The word give is the word dotome. If I say that right, didomai, yeah. And so that's the Greek for give. And that means basically, that would be like giving a Christmas present. That would be giving out of the generosity of your heart. That'd be me giving, you know, one of my grandchildren, you know, $5 to go to McDonald's or something like that. It's a gift. I'm giving it to them. The word that Jesus here uses is autodidomai. Apple didomai. I don't know Greek, okay? I don't know why I do this. Apple didomai. But it means to give back. Not to give, but to give back. What belongs to them? You're returning. You're paying back an obligation that you owe. It's a moral responsibility. You're giving back. Now, the coin belongs to Caesar, so you give it back to Caesar. Jesus is saying, give this blasphemous king back his blasphemous money. And you think, like it or not, you think about what Caesar has done for you. In our case, what the government has done for us, we drive on his roads. Did you notice that our road out here got paved? It got paved Friday. I want to take credit for that, but we didn't do that. The government did that. So praise, you know, thank you. You know, so we live in their economy, the government's economy. We live under the government's protection. You know, police, fire department, military. And we have beautiful parks, and we have clean water, we have trash removal. All these things done for you require that you give back payment for what has been done for you. So we're not talking about free gifts of generosity. We're talking about payment for services you use. Jesus is declaring that paying taxes was not only perfectly legal, it was a moral obligation. And get this, notice that Jesus did not make any qualifying exemptions or exceptions. Jesus did not say, for instance, that taxes were only owed to good governments. You know, if the government is acting properly, if the government's not corrupt, then you need to pay your taxes. Jesus didn't say that. No, you pay your taxes. They're going to be corrupt. They're going to do what they do. That's not on you. What's on you is to do your part. You pay the taxes. God will hold you responsible for what you do. He's going to hold them responsible for what they do. Got to understand that. And I say all that to ask a big question here. Was Jesus a revolutionist? An insurrectionist? With his band of rebels, the disciples, those wild guys? What is a revolutionist? A revolutionist is one who revolts against authority. With that definition, I would tell you Jesus was no revolutionist. He submitted to authority. And he taught his disciples that we are to submit to governing authorities, and we are to pray for them, and we are to obey them, and here we are to pay them. When I ask that question, because that's exactly what the Pharisees accused him of before Pilate. In Luke 23, verse 1, they led him off to Pilate. They began to accuse him, saying, "We have found this man to be subverting our nation." That's what he's subverting our nation. He's teaching everybody to be obedient to the government. No, he's subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar. That was just 3 days after this. When they take him to Pilate and accuses him, when he clearly says, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's," no, he's opposing paying taxes to Caesar. Well, they're lying. It's a blatant lie. They couldn't get Jesus to say it, so they had to make it up. Jesus did not, and this is why this is important, Jesus did not advocate violent overthrow of corrupt cultures. He advocated obedience, even obedience to corrupt cultures. He told the Jews to pay their taxes to Caesar. His disciples taught that Christians are to be submissive to the governing authorities, even wicked, corrupt Roman authorities. And the results, can you just wrap your mind around that? Jesus would tell you that we are to submit and obey these corrupt governing authorities. But the results of this, the first generation of followers of Jesus Christ turned the world upside down. They attacked the Roman Empire with love and submission. That's the weapons we use. And in 300 years, they redeemed a fallen, decadent culture. It took 300 years, but they radically turned Rome upside down by carrying the gospel and interacting with the leaders and spreading their faith in Jesus Christ and submitting and loving and boldly proclaiming their love for Jesus Christ. They turned the world upside down. They carried a countercultural message. And millions of Romans were converted because of their respect and their submission, because of Christians' respect and submission. I mean, I'm saying this is a hard subject for a lot of people. This is hard. I can identify more with Simon the Zealot, you know. I read this like, okay, calm down. Trust Jesus. And to point this out, for 2,000 years, faithful Christians, being faithful, trusting God, doing it God's way, we have been transforming cultures for 2,000 years. When we live out the gospel, not when we take it out of God's hands and do what we think is right. No, we got to do what Jesus says is right. Okay, I say all that, and I want to say this here. The problem with this whole passage is that we focus so much on taxes. We focus so much on giving to Caesar. And that's only half of what Jesus is talking about. That's not even the big half of what Jesus is talking about. Give to Caesar's what is Caesar's, but focus on this. And give to God what is God's. I mean, all this stuff about Caesar, that's a sideshow. It's about you and God. What is your responsibility to God? What do you owe God? And I would say, okay, what belongs to Caesar's? You know, if the image is on the coin, you give it to Caesar. What image is on you? You bear the image of God. Genesis 1, verse 27, so God created man in his own image. Male and female, he created them. You are created in His image. You belong to God. To bear God's image, you bear God's image, so give yourself back to God. Everything we have, everything we are, belongs to God. And you see how this, like, this parallels with what we've been talking about lately, the cursing of the fruit tree, and the parable, the wicked tenants who wouldn't give back to God, and now he's given us this. We are to give back to God. We are the managers. We are the stewards. We are the renters. Let me quickly apply some of this here to money. I don't want the money. Money should not be the focus, but it's part of it. Give back to God what we owe Him financially, our tithe. And we do that. We give in order to combat the powerful influences of materialism in our lives. That's one reason. We give in order to enable the church to do God's work. Through evangelism and outreach and mission trips and our youth program, our children's program. We got some great things going on here. It takes money. Okay, just want to point that out. It takes money. And we give to say thank you to God. And our level of giving should reflect our level of thankfulness. So there's a few reasons. Just think about my money. It's not my money. It's God's money. So I give back to God. I don't give to God. I give back to God. I render to God because I owe Him so much. And I'll never be able to pay it all. But when I tithe, it helps me give a little back to God. And I wrote this down. I don't know and I don't want to know how much anybody in this church gives. I'm completely removed from that. I don't know how much anybody in this church gives. What I do care about is whether or not you're giving yourself to God. Not your money, that's between you and God and two other people in the church who knows about that. What I want to know about if you're giving your heart to God, if you're giving your mind to God, if you're giving your strength to God, if you're giving your soul to God. That's what I'm in it for, to encourage us. Let's be faithful to God. Let's live for God. Are you rendering to God the things that are God? Okay, back page of the outline. Let me last verse, Mark 12, verse 17. It says they were amazed at Him. Jesus said this simple thing, and everyone was amazed. It says in Matthew that they marveled, and they left Him and went away. And the hunters went away empty-handed. They marveled, they were amazed, but not enough to obey. Not enough to submit. If they had obeyed, they would not have left hungry. He's the bread of life. He's the living water. But they went away hungry because they were determined to trap Him instead of listen to Him. I say all that. What's the application? What are we supposed to take away from this? First of all, whose image is on your money? And for me, it would be Abraham Lincoln. I've got a lot of pennies. Okay. Whose image is on my money is the government. So what do I owe the government? And we talked about some of this stuff already. Romans 13, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. We're to submit to the government. Don't gripe, don't complain, don't grumble, don't conform to the pattern of this world. And when I say don't conform to the pattern of this world, what is this world trying to do when it comes to taxes? They're trying to cheat the system. Don't try to cheat the system. That really would undermine your witness. You and I are called, we've talked about this over the past several weeks, you and I are called to be a blessing. This is one way that we can be a blessing. You pay our taxes, get involved, vote, all these things. This is what we owe our government. We had the opportunity to do these things, which they didn't have these opportunities 2,000 years ago. But we can be involved in the system. And we can help the system, and we need to be the salt and the light in the system. And we need to be praying for those in authority. The Bible clearly tells us that. Pray for those in authority. And we need to do whatever we can to make our communities better. You know, maybe parks and bridges and roads and police. I'll take you to Jeremiah 29, when God's people were sent in exile in Babylon. This is the words that God spoke to Jeremiah. He says, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I will carry you off into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. So we are to pray for the city, and we are to hope the city prospers. We pray for our country. Hope our country prospers. If it prospers, we too will prosper. Understand that we need the government. It's been established by God for our good. I've said this many times. A bad government is better than no government. No government, that's anarchy. I'll take a bad government over anarchy any day. But that's just part of it. Whose image is on your money? Yeah, it's the government. Whose image is on you? You are created in God's image. The point is, what do you owe God? You belong to God. Everything about you belongs to God. The government doesn't own you. Jesus owns you. Caesar has no right to your worship. Caesar has no right to tell you to disobey God. Caesar has no right to enslave you. You bear the image of God. You belong to God. Give to God what is God's. And what is that? That would be our lives, our liberty, our possessions, our affections. They come from God, they belong to God, and they should be given back to God. You bear the image of God. His inscription is written all over you. So when I say give to God what is God's, the most obvious thing that includes is yourself. And that's been Jesus' message throughout the gospel. When he meets up with the disciples, he says, leave your careers, leave your families, and follow me. The rich young ruler, he tells them, follow me. To the crowds, he said, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. If you're truly giving yourself to God, if you recognize you belong to God and you want to give yourself back to God, that means you're going to follow Jesus. You're going to put your faith in Jesus Christ. You're going to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. That's truly how it begins, to give yourself back to God. You give your life to Jesus Christ. And Jesus tells us just a few verses later in verse 28, he says, love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and all your strength. Your heart belongs to God, your soul belongs to God, your mind belongs to God, your strength belongs to God. Give it all to God. And if you give it all to God, then I'm thinking your money's going to follow. And that's the thing that makes everybody nervous. That's just that, no, get that, forget it. Don't worry about it. Just give yourself to God, and whatever happens with your money happens. And you give your house to God. Then you give your family to God. And you give your aspirations to God. You give your hopes to God, your dreams to God. And your fears, have you given you fear God alone. You shouldn't be fearing what this world is doing, what man is doing. You fear God. That's it. Only fear God. And you give him all your attention. You give him all your thoughts. That's what it means to give God what is God's. Now, I just want to challenge you. How are you doing on that? Anybody owe God anything today? Do you need to render to God anything? What is it that you need to render to God? Let me close with this verse. Romans 14, verse 8. For whether we live unto the Lord. And whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. And I don't know about you, I take so much comfort, so much delight in the fact that I belong to God. And I want to give him as much as I can. I'm just curious. What about you?